So, of course, a good friend called me in a bit of a panic this weekend, asking if I had any good gift ideas for his wife for Christmas. Totally last minute. My God, boys, when will you learn? She is now, in fairness to him, she is really, really hard to shop for, and but she's been really struggling with perimenopause.
I know where this is going. And yes, this is an amazing idea. Tell him to sign her up for Coral's rapid relief program.
Right? Exactly. Or even like their complete care, or I don't know, just go to coral.ca and check out any one of their great four programs. Like,
And don't forget, yes, don't forget to tell him about our discount code.
oh, yes, that's right. That's TIP5 for 5% off. Oh, good idea.
Oh my God, I know a few dudes I'm going to share your brilliant idea with once we get done recording today. So good.
I know. Merry Christmas, ladies. We've had so many great conversations with so many incredible guests, and some of the best moments happen when we aren't recording. We wanted to start sharing these best moments with you. So we've started inviting some of our favorite people to meet us in our podcast green room and just talk or say the thing. Say the thing that we usually feel we can't or shouldn't say when the recording button is on. For our inaugural chat, we sat down with Beatrice Sega from the This Time of the Month community to talk about what happens when you deeply love your partner and also feel irrational rage towards them for breathing, chewing, or just existing too damn loud. We hope you enjoy this unfiltered chat as much as we did.
Let's maybe start with the phrase, I love you and I want to kill you. And both
Both
can
can
be
be
very
true.
true, right?
Okay. Two things can be true at once.
Fair.
And I love you, but please don't touch me and just leave me alone. Those are definite feelings that
Stop
are okay.
breathing or
Oh my God.
don't chew like that or I found that those feelings were not just deeply sincere. They were scary because I couldn't figure out why I was having them and where they were coming from. Right? I knew rationally that I love this person and I chose to marry him and I would still do that again. But in the moment, the level of rage I felt for this human terrified me. For a variety of reasons.
And I mean, I don't think that just starts in perimenopause. I think that starts postpartum.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It maybe manifests in different ways, I should say. But if you've had children, I think that's a moment in which some of those feelings can pop up.
Because you start having other people that now depend on you and need your patience and need you to be.
And they're on you. They're on you.
Literally. Fair.
On literally. People are.
Attached.
I remember my son, he was probably like 2 months old, and my husband got home from work. I like, here's the baby. I go upstairs, I run the bath, I'm in the bath, and the dog pushes the door open and starts licking my arm. And I was like, I didn't see someone that fucking touching me. Yes, I remember those moments. Oh my God. They're on
Yes,
you. You don't have any
we're on you.
personal.
Like it's a physical piece of you. There's the emotional, but then there's the physical. And I think that's certainly one way a relationship starts to change.
For sure.
There are others. And then, yes, as you enter the perimenopause phase of your life, which I've talked about it a lot on my podcast and on my social media and with my girlfriends. You didn't know that. I didn't know that. Menopause was something I knew. Menopause was a distant future where your periods stop and you get hot flashes. It's about what, you kind of are socialized with. It's certainly no education, even when you study health sciences, medical sciences, very little attention paid. The reproductive cycle portion is really like let's teach you about the birds and the bees. Let's not get pregnant, not get pregnant, not get pregnant. Oh, now you want to get pregnant. This is everything you do. Oh, now you're pregnant. This is what you need to do to have a healthy pregnancy. And then you have the baby and it's kind of like,
see ya. You're on your own.
Crickets, right? And so I didn't realize I was in perimenopause, but you're having the little kids for me later in life. So there was some crossover. Didn't realize it. And all these things start to happen. Yeah. Why are you breathing? It bothers me. You're talking too much right now. I don't, you know, and you're like, wait, I like this person. I love this person. Why do I feel this way? Definitely we've, you know, learned biology has a lot to do with it because our beautiful hormones start to go wacky. They're chaotic, but they're on a decline. And that somehow removes a level of
filter
and complacency and desire to nest and please. So that's the biological explanation, but I really like to talk about the other stuff. You know, if we want to learn more about the biology, we've both had lots of guests who walk us through that, but it's the relationship part. I mean, you have to talk about it with the people in your life, your partner, your kids. And I think it's the burden that whether we put it on ourselves or society puts it on, or you adopt roles in a relationship in early on, and for better or worse, you adopt these roles and then you start to want to break out of those roles, or certain things start to annoy you that didn't before. I know for myself, it took a long time for it to come at the forefront. It's kind of, you're not conscious of it. You just know you feel rage, you feel angry, you feel annoyed. You've made sacrifices. I don't regret the choices I've made. I wanted a family. I found a partner to share my life with. But the cards fell in a certain way where my career took a back seat, or I had to adapt to a less flexible career that my husband has, like literally geographically less flexible. So where we live limits my career opportunities, the number of hours he has to work, the type of work he does. So it was a joint decision, but that two things can be true. I made the decision willingly in a partnership. But after years and years and years, you know, when the estrogen decreasing, you start to ask yourself, like, how'd I get here?
And is this what I still want?
Yeah. Is that what I still want?
And then how do you, if you've set those roles and set those patterns, my husband and I have been together since, gosh, 93, so forever. And like, if you've already, like, that's more than half my life. So now how do you start suddenly going, well, no, I don't want that role anymore. I want to be someone else. I want to do something different. And luckily my husband is extremely supportive, and he's like, you know, he gives me a lot of space and a lot of grace. But there's still things like, it's like, yeah, I don't know how you make those changes. I guess conversation you have to talk through, but it's still hard.
And I think also there's internal work for sure that I've had to do, and I'm going to have to keep doing that specifically addresses this, because I was pretty blind to the fact that I had a big role in maintaining the social norms that were now my life and my family. Right. And I was pushing against these things, but I wasn't even really aware consciously of how I was also trying to keep them in place. Does that make sense?
Well, I guess a sense of control, you know, we exert a certain level of control and expect everyone to kind of go along with it. It's not one way. It's not one way.
I think also it's not one way. And also it was about control for sure, but also about trying to live up to this unreal expectation that we as a society and us as women have set, that, you know, we can do it all.
Yep.
And you're somehow failing if you're not doing it all. And that was a big hurdle for me.
Mm-hmm. It becomes so much of our identity, right? That productivity. I got this done. I got this done. And you're dying inside. And yet there's still like, it's tough too, because even though it's like draining your battery, it's also validation at the end of the day that I have some worth still. This is like,
you know, like a false validation, because we all bought the Kool-Aid that you can be everything. You can have everything. You can be perfect at everything. That's definitely internalized messaging. And I think that's what starts to happen. You start to question it, and you should. And you know, do you have to be perfect at everything, but then feel exhausted, feel angry? No, the answer is no. But I'm sitting in this chair saying no now, but I'm 52 going on 53. It's taken me a whole journey to get here, and to give myself permission to drop certain things, pick up other things, communicate about it, talk it through with your partner, with your teens. I have teens now. It's like, yeah, I know this is, you know, Sunday's always been pancake morning, but do you think you could do the pancakes now? Because mom's tired.
I can't do it all.
Mom's tired now. And, you know, you'll be surprised. They'll be like, I'll make the pancakes. They take over some of that tradition. Or, yes, we take on roles because we thought that that's what you could do. Do it all. Be perfect. Or if you've taken a setback or a second row seat to your career, you had to prove to yourself, well, I'm going to be the best darn
mom, housemaker,
mom,
homemaker,
and partner, and everything, and, you know, whatever. So you overcompensate maybe, and really, no, you're enough. All these cliche things, they sound cliche, but they have truth. You're enough.
Sure. You don't have to
be perfect.
Prove your worth. You don't have to work for love. Worth.
Yeah.
Work for love. Oh my God. Yes. That's that just like,
but it's also
resonated
okay,
my
I would
body.
Say it's okay to be like, okay, yeah, for a certain amount of period, you know, my career shifted, or this is what I did, or if you chose to stay at home, whatever that change that you made earlier on in your life, it's not a tattoo. Just because it was like that then, it doesn't need to be like that now. And I think that's the permission and the narrative we need to focus on. That's what we did for 5 years, for 10 years. Here's where I'm at now. Here's where I want to focus my energy and my time. How are we going to make it work as a family? What does that look like? I think that's the permission that you need to give yourself, and that I've certainly given myself. And boundaries around that. It's like,
I was
okay,
just gonna
now
say,
my career's ramping up. Guess what? Mom's not gonna be here for 3 days because I'm going to the menopause show, you know, and can you get a ride for practice? You guys are good. Your husband, means I'm not around. And it's uncomfortable for people, but they adjust.
Well, it's interesting because as you were saying, permission, give yourself permission. I was like, that's just the first step. And then we've got to set the boundaries. And then once we do set the boundaries and we're okay with it, then we have to start being okay with other people feeling their feelings and not being okay with the boundaries we've set.
Correct.
Like, this is like that. Like, there's so many levels. It's a lot. But
that last one is really hard.
Yeah. The boundaries are hard, and I'm still learning what it even means to set a boundary, because actually the boundary is you. It's not external. And then that was my big aha moment, right? So it's just you making little tweaks and standing in those boundaries. So it's not easy. It's a daily practice. And boundaries doesn't mean ghosting people. It doesn't mean aggressively, like, I'm not doing this anymore. It's not that.
No, it's protecting your energy. And
yeah.
Do you have any examples, Beatrice, of where you've had some success with boundaries?
Yeah, I think just taking a step back. So letting your family figure things out. Mm. Right. So, hey, this week I'm busy. I have a few engagements, business meetings. I'm going to be around less. FYI, I can help out by ordering the groceries. Do you all know what you want this week? Because it's going to be on you to prepare it. And then not worry. That's what it is. I've had the convo. I've told you what's coming up. If you come home and you're upset that there's no dinner, or you actually don't feel like cooking your own dinner, I'm not worrying about it. I'm not carrying the load. I'm not carrying the guilt.
Yeah.
That to me is, it's like, see you later. And then I come home and I see if they did or did not eat or what they ate. And it's all cool because eventually.
And if they ate a bag of Doritos, then whatever.
Yeah, you made an egg. That's what they did. Great, lo and behold, no, they made dinner for themselves. And actually, we don't give them enough credit, whether it's the kids, the partner's a grown-ass person. They're fine. So yeah. I do think some of it is us. Some of it is what we've assumed as like, almost a mothering role. And if I may, on that topic, we talk a lot about, again, the biology of what's happening to us in our relation. Like, oh, yes, your sex hormones are out of whack. They're decreasing. Your body's telling you don't need to make babies. Hormones, it's kind of a natural biological explanation as to why maybe your sex drive is down. But once again, also, if in your relationship you've adopted for 5, 10, 25 years a mothering role. And we could unpack why we do that. But let's just park that and say some of us adopt a parenting role in the relationship. That's going to affect your libido.
No shit. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
That's not your hormones. No amount of hormone therapy is going to help you with that. It's like, internally, like, am I your mother? Am I your partner? I don't need to worry about buying the birthday card for your parent.
Buying the gift and wrapping it. And yes.
Correct. And so that's going back to the boundaries. It's kind of like, you know what? That's a big mental load on me. I can't do that anymore. Can you buy your, I don't want to, this, and this. We need to review the terms of the relationship. I can't handle buying the birthday cards anymore. Can you be in charge of the kid team sport thing on the WhatsApp? Because I get 63,000 messages per day on it and I can't deal. Just let me know. Let me know the important stuff. If I'm on duty for driving, you just let me know. But I'm not reading it, right? Decrease that mental load. Decrease the mothering load.
Alex on Call Her Daddy has an episode just dropped yesterday or this week, and it's Stop Parenting Your Partner, and it's all about this conversation. And it's great because she's talking to a younger generation. So hopefully the ladies coming up behind us will have their shit together.
You're not the parent in the relationship. You are partners. And so work on that. Stop yourself from mothering. and really act, say the thing, say what's on your mind, say where you need the help. They're not going to guess.
Oh yeah. Like just got to stop with the, you should just know what I'm thinking.
No. That's insane. I say what I need, what I would like. And
now how many times can I ask, how many times is it acceptable for me to say the thing? Pick up the laundry that's at the bottom of the stairs and put it in the laundry bin, husband and child. And they never, ever do it. They walk over it. And every time I go down the stairs, I use the basement staircase as my laundry bin, for dirty towels or whatever. They're always on the floor. Neither of them ever pick them up. And I'm like, I've said the thing. I've asked, I can't even tell
you. Don't do it.
Can I get it? Yeah, but then I do the laundry.
No, no. So that's something that
that's
I stopped.
On me. That's on
I
me.
Stopped. Every year we have as a family with the kids, but I think it's important to do with your partner. So as a family, Labor Day weekend, We set goals with the kids, but I added a responsibility every year of their life. So, you know, grade six was like, okay, well, I don't remember if it was grade six or seven, but it was around there, I want to say. You know, laundry's on you. You can do your laundry. I want you to be a self-sufficient human. You can do your laundry. You're in charge of your laundry. I stopped doing it, which means we need to be okay. And this is, you know, even experts.
You probably went to school with some dirty clothes a few times.
Yes. You go to, it means that you have to be okay with them figuring out my, oh, I forgot to do my laundry, so I have nothing to wear or wear the dirty thing. You have to be okay with it. But for the most part, you'll be surprised. I think kids pick it up. And same with the husband. Like, I'm not buying your mom's card anymore. then you either forget to buy her card or you buy the card. And I use that as an example. But you get it, right? You get it, what I'm talking about. That mental load. That some,
absolutely.
It's not just like, man, you are evil. Your husband's this. And no, it's something we sort of fell into. He's 25 years of being together and somehow you fell into a pattern. And the pattern is somehow I ended up doing a lot of things. And now it's just like, it's up to me to say, like, you know, I'm not doing this, this and that. You can do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think too, you know, we're talking about kids showing up to school with dirty clothes, your mom-in-law not getting a card on her birthday or Mother's Day. And like, I'm thinking about, and I think what is a big driver, at least for me, for why I so easily fell into that role and kept doing it for so long is fear of judgment.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Give less F's, my darling. Give less F's.
Exactly. And you just,
who's gonna judge you? They're going to judge you no matter what you do.
Well, they're going, exactly. I mean, it's a falsehood to think that, okay, I need to do all of these things so that I might be.
It's a falsehood. We actually underestimate. It really is for us to just be like, say no, or, you know, give space and room for people to pick up and figure things out. And then we, you know, talk about, also the other thing is we are very afraid to talk to our partner about how we're feeling.
Mm-hmm.
So through my podcasting, it's been a journey because it's been therapeutic. Sisterhood too. Sister, in the podcasting and the social media for me is an added layer of my, an extension, I should say, of mm-hmm. my real life, which is mm-hmm. sisterhood. Mm-hmm. Really rely on those bonds and the girlfriends, and we tell each other stuff, but we kind of leave the partners out sometimes.
Yeah.
So I've learned you have to, again, say this thing. It's like, hey, I don't know why, but like when you're chewing that apple, I want to strangle you. And I'm sorry, because I just need you to know that. Because then you come to hug me and I'm all annoyed. And I just want you to know, I don't know why I'm feeling this way, but this is what's happening. It's like that thing the experts call spontaneous desire. You know, there's a word for it. I didn't know.
What it is.
It is.
Like 30 years ago.
When you're full of estrogen. And testosterone and things. So yes, spontaneous desire is a form of desire. It is a more youthful form of desire. It is also attached to new relationships.
Like
there's, you know, there's a couple
absolutely.
Of aspects to it when things are new, if you think back. But there's this other thing called responsive desire. It's a very academic term that I've learned through, again, expert guests on the show. But it was so helpful for me to have a word to it. Because what does that mean? It means we need to create that opportunity, but that opportunity means we have to say the things like what's on our mind, what do I need to feel in the mood, because you just reaching out, you know, on the couch or rolling over in bed is just not going to work for me anymore. I need A, B, and C. And by the way, what do you need? What's your yum?
Yes,
again, a fantastic guest, what's her name, Luna Mataras. I love her. Shout out to her, Luna Mataras. You know, telling each other, it's embarrassing. Your yum may have changed and your yuck is now new. You didn't have that yuck and now you have a yuck.
Yeah.
You got to just say it. It's surprising what happens. and what comes out of it.
Well, and just how, I'm going to say that, just how erotic vulnerability can be, right? When you're willing to be real and not put on what you think you're supposed to be.
Yes.
Dr. Lori Brado has a book called Better Sex Through Mindfulness. I loved that book, and it's amazing how much more sexual you can become if you just give yourself the opportunity, space, and grace to just be in the moment and not be doing the multitasking that
in your head
we've all adopted in order to be the mother, the, you know,
yeah,
do all of those roles. Because, you know, if your husband's nibbling your neck and you're doing a mental grocery list and thinking about who's picking up whoever tomorrow and like, well, can nibble all he wants. It's not going to happen.
Yeah. Mindfulness, trying to clear that. But I want to go back to also, it means you also have to clear, how do you get rid of that mental load? You know,
Absolutely.
Monkeys running absolutely around your mind. It's because once again, in society, we've somehow adopted this idea that that load is entirely ours to carry. So I think that's the thing that you have to figure out how to create the space. And, you know, it's not necessarily just like, because I remember like, oh, it is mindful, like sex. Like we just got to sit here and stare at each other and like, like, that ain't going to work.
That's not working. Nope.
It's not working, right? But like all of a sudden, like the fact that he filled my gas tank, you know, because he noticed my car was low on gas and like,
right?
Well, I'm going to go fill her car because I know she drives the kid to his sport. Like, and I mean, wow, that was like so literally a turn on.
Cleaning the kitchen.
So it's to take the load off, the mental load off. If you can do that, I think it creates that space.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Fair. Mm-hmm. Well, we've just solved like the world's problems now, or like the world's sexual problems.
Yes. Yes.
I think. Yeah.
Yeah. It's and I think to what you talked about earlier, Beatrice, right? All of this takes some work. Like you have to, it's not a once and done, right? It's a muscle you have to exercise, right? Okay, wait a minute. I matter too. I deserve space. I should have the opportunity to explore my interests, right? I need an opportunity to just be. And that doesn't happen overnight, for sure.
No, and it can feel scary, again, when you're in a pattern, you know, your relationship's like a certain way. So if I had, you know, anything to say is, good things come out of change, but you know, you have to talk about them and talk about them. And that's another really good tip that, you know, one of our therapists gave on the show, which is you talk about it not during the tiff or the moment of irritation. You talk about it on the dog walk or whatever. It's like, hey, probably like, I know my patience is really short these days. It's perimenopause, it's menopause, but at the same time, I don't want to be this way, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then listen to what they have to say. But, you know, it helps because it's like, oh, the, you know, it's not me. She doesn't hate me.
Context is so important.
Right. And so I think it takes it. It's maybe a little bit scary at first to talk about the difficult things because we're so driven on, hey, Johnny has a thing tomorrow. And, oh, gosh, we're going to the Smith, you know, the Smith barbecue this weekend and the, you know, whatever. But,
you know, it's
we don't talk about the deeper things because that's uncomfortable.
But you do have a point that going on the walk isn't easy because even though this is probably against all the, you know, the high level communication tactics, when you're walking, you're not looking at each other. So you don't have to make that eye contact. It's a little less intimidating that way. And there's movement and there's, you know, you're in nature. And I feel like that's like probably the perfect spot to have those difficult
I think it's a really good spot. And I mean, I think with teenagers, I've definitely adopted that in the car.
Because then you're not looking, you're not making eye contact. Like, there's something that takes that bit of pressure off. I know, you know, when I was in college or university, like, go for an interview, make sure you make eye contact. It's so important. But sometimes, maybe.
Yeah. I think, and there's a context for everything, but I do think that type of safe scenario where you're not in the thick of anything, you can bring up topics. And yes, a little bit of that kind of movement and nature or the drive, It just creates that little safety of, I can say things and it's not like, oh my God, I'm on you. And like, having this intense conversation. It's just like, okay, to bring it up and think about it and not have the answers to everything either. Mm. You don't have answers to everything. And we're also not going to be what we are today. We're not today the same as we were when we first met. And so let's change together. We're on our own path. So cliche. It sounds cliche, but
it's true.
I think it's true.
I love it. Thank you. That was great. I think that's a great
thing to wrap. Thank you for having me. That was really fun.
Yeah. Let's do it again. I think there's all kinds of topics like this that a lot of people don't have the benefit of having had the experience yet of having an honest conversation with anyone, girlfriend, partner, whatever. And it's just, it's helpful when you realize, oh, this isn't just me.
Thanks so much for listening to the show. If you like what you hear, please subscribe and write a review
so more women can find us and get a better understanding of what to expect in perimenopause.
This information is not intended as medical advice. The intent of this information is to provide the listener with knowledge to support more efficient and effective communication with their medical provider.